Brother Nick's devotion was a good introduction to our last of the Ten Commandments. And we've been having a series of lessons on the Ten Commandments following the movie called I Am. And this is going to be the last of the Ten Commandments. I'm not sure yet. We may do a summary lesson to kind of reflect back over all of them next week. I'm not totally sure yet. So the last one is in Exodus 20th chapter, verse 17. The last is, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. So Brother Nick's devotion talked about, you know, things. So is there something that you know, that you would like to have that you don't have? Anybody want to give an example? Something you don't have that you love to have.
A nice car.
Nice car.
Our own house.
Our own house.
Your ability to teach.
That's good. I'd say if we were starting to vote for classes again, you know, maybe that. That sounded like coveting, didn't it, to you? He was coveting my position? No. That's how I viewed that definition. We're going to talk about that. Other things? Other things you'd like to have, you don't have that you'd love to have?
Lots of money.
Lots of money. So let me ask you this question. Is there any of those things that you'd like to have, that you don't have, that you love to have? Are any of those things wrong?
Not in and of themselves.
Not in and of themselves. Okay? I would agree with that. Is there anything wrong with money? Money's the root of all evil, isn't it?
Of the love of money.
Okay. Yeah, we always talk about that, you know. The love of money is the root of all evil. There's a lot more to that. The money itself, the house in itself, the car in itself. All those things are not wrong. And we're going to talk about, and I want you to be thinking about this, we're going to talk about the contrast. What is, and I'm going to ask you this question, we're going to watch the video, and then I want us to talk about what is the difference between coveting and desiring. What's the difference between desiring and coveting? Is it wrong to desire? So that's something I want us to talk about. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at this last of the I Am videos and pay attention to this in terms of looking in what elements here were of coveting, that you see behaviors here that led to destructive or potentially destructive choices in a person's life themselves. Okay.
Previously on the 10.
What's next?
An interview with the LA Sun, no less.
I don't want to talk to a reporter today.
I think you'll want to talk to this reporter.
Alice Bordeaux, LA Sun. You asked for and achieved life in prison for Victor Ramirez for stealing $150.
And the people of Los Angeles are better off for it.
One bad choice, no second chances.
Depends on the choice.
Who is your future?
I wanted to be Aaron.
And who is your past?
Spencer.
There is a fine line between what we want and what we need. Sometimes they are the same, but when they are different, life becomes as hazy as L.A. smog.
Chicago, 5:40 flight.
I do have a seat available. It's going to be a full fare, though.
It's not about money.
Hey,
Do you ever feel alone?
Sure. Everyone does.
No. I mean, like, everyone has at least someone. Like me.
What is going on with you?
I'm lost.
If you can't get over her, why'd you let her go?
Because it's not that simple.
It's out of our jurisdiction. It's FBI territory now.
Not if the crime took place here.
Come on, Aaron. The guy's dead. You're really going to burn up my department with an investigation into a dead guy?
It's just hard for me to believe he acted alone. If there's this much money involved, there's a conspiracy. Let's take a look at the brother. He's got a motive.
You're the boss. Until you become DA, and then you'll be too big for us little people.
Don't hold your breath.
You got my vote.
Elizabeth, you're too good to me.
There is one thing.
You know what? Save it. Got my parents' anniversary tonight. Gotta pick up Alice at 7.
It's about Alice.
You know what? Don't tell me.
You're destined to be DA. You know that. After that, the mayor, the governor. After that, who knows? But the one thing that can keep you from where you want to be is a scandal.
Let's get something straight. I haven't done anything.
There are going to be skeletons in your closet. Make sure the bones are yours.
Sorry I'm late. It was a crazy day at work.
Wow. You look so handsome. What's wrong?
You know what? Let's go inside.
No, baby, it's your parents' anniversary. We're gonna be late to the party.
No. Go. I have never been inside. Not once.
Is it that big of a deal?
Is it that big of a deal?
We're gonna be late. We're gonna.
You have a daughter that you never told me about. Yes, Alice. It is that big of a deal.
She has a kid. I have two. Should no one ever marry me?
It's not the same thing. She had an affair.
Before she met you. Can people not change?
I didn't say that.
No, but you meant it. Because you're perfect, right? And she's not. So she's gotta go.
What do you want me to do, Evie? Give up every single thing I've ever had? Just to be with her. Some girl.
If you love her, yes.
Okay. If I do that, every time I walk into a courtroom, every time I give a speech, every time I go anywhere, no one will ever see me again. They'll just see the guy that married the stalker.
Aaron, when I married Scott, I didn't marry a man. I married a resume. And after 10 years and 2 kids, the resume is not enough. You can't live someone else's life and chase after someone else's title. You've got to live your own.
Okay. Okay.
Gonna go grab lunch.
Yeah, sure thing.
You know, listen, the son wants a comment about that Godwater guy getting the inheritance.
Son, I can't talk to her.
No, Alice quit. She's moving to Chicago. This is the new guy. He seems like a real pit bull from New York. Do you want to call him, or should I schedule something when I get back?
When did she quit?
I don't know. I just found out when the new guy called. I didn't really think you'd want me to tell you.
No, it's okay.
Okay, she's leaving on the 5:40 flight to Chicago, Trans Air.
What?
I couldn't help it. I had to know. So she's moving back with her parents. They drove the furniture back last week, and now she and the baby are meeting them there this afternoon. Aaron, this is your last chance.
What's the fastest way to LAX?
We are now boarding all rows for flight 712, nonstop service to Chicago. Go now. Once again, this is your final boarding call for flight 712, nonstop service to Chicago. Boarding all rows.
They're calling for us.
She's beautiful.
I can't do this. This is not real. I can't have drama anymore. My parents are in Chicago. I have a daughter to think about, and I owe it to her to give her a normal life.
Alice, I'm sorry.
Aaron, you can't just
Alice,
come
I'm
here
sorry.
And expect...
I'm sorry. All my life, I wanted to be somebody. But how can I be somebody if I can't be with the someone I love?
It's too complicated. I'm sorry, I can't do this. I have to go.
No. Me too. Going to Chicago, Alice. Whether you like it or not.
We are closing the gates, ma'am.
Well, close them then. And put that ring away. But not too far away.
What does that mean? It
means you better have a stroller. Because ours is on its way to Chicago.
Coming to the airport and following me to Chicago? You were stalking me.
Yeah, I was.
We have to take this slow.
Absolutely.
We gotta do this the right way.
Flying slow.
The irony is, the one thing you've always wanted, you've always had. Love.
We look at something and we say that we have to have it, and we don't care what it takes. And that's the line that we cross right there. When we say we don't care what it takes, because we think to ourselves, we don't care what we have to sacrifice. We don't care what we have to pay for it. We just want it. And that's what takes us from admiring to needing to ultimately coveting. And we see this in the movie with two characters. You see, they both have this desire, but they also covet. The guy, Aaron, who misses the love that's right next to him because he's so concerned with this position that may be out in front of him. And his sister, she makes this mistake in the past of marrying some guy that she probably doesn't really even love just because she wants the resume. She wants the position. And it doesn't matter what she has to step over in order to get it. It's all the concept of coveting. The commandment goes, don't covet anything your neighbor has. Don't covet their wife. Don't covet their servants. Don't even covet their donkey or their ox. Now, I know what you're thinking. I don't have any livestock running down my street either. But this is what it's saying. It's saying, don't chase after someone else's life. Simply put, don't have to have what other people have. You know, it's the house. It's other people's cars. It's the corner office. It's the beautiful jewelry that we see on people, or they go on these great vacations, or it's these other lifestyles that other people have that we just have to have. And it's not just admiring them, or it's not just even desiring them, because there's nothing wrong with that. It's taking that next step of saying, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get it. Doesn't matter who I step over, doesn't matter what I step over. I want that. We're going to look into the lives of two people in the Old Testament, and they're two pretty wicked people, King Ahab and his wife Jezebel. And their neighbor has something that they want, and they're willing to go to any length to get it, even kill him. And that's what they do. And now, obviously, we would never go to that extreme to get something that we want. But it's that great reminder for us that if something is to die for, it may not be something that we want to go after, unless that something is you. And that's what God did. He looked at you and said, you are worth dying for. And so Jesus, he went to the cross for you and for me. It's God's way of showing us how much he truly loves us. And that's what the Ten Commandments are all about. You know, oftentimes we confuse them as a way that we think we have to live to earn God's love. Or we think that we have to live this way to try to get to God. God says, I love you. God looked at the Israelites and he said to them that they were his. And then he gave them the commandments. The commandments are God's way of loving us by protecting us. God looks at us and says, I love you. You are mine. And here's 10 great ways to live.
So, what were the things that Aaron, what were the things that Aaron was coveting?
Political clout?
Position.
Position.
What was he willing to sacrifice in order to get that? For those who didn't see the whole story, the storyline is he's assistant DA, run for district attorney. The likelihood is he would run for governor. And frankly, there was appears to be people of position in his family, too, that had been in those positions.
Well, he obviously fell in love with that young lady and he was willing to sacrifice that.
Why was he willing to sacrifice that? What was wrong with him falling in love with her?
Kind of meeting vulnerable for his, where he wanted to be.
Potential scandal.
Okay. Anything that would get in his way from reaching that other goal.
Okay. So there was nothing wrong with loving her. I think that that's, you know, I really like the way that talked about the love part of it. And, but the one thing you've always wanted, you have. And that's love. I mean, as individuals, that God loves us. And I kind of like the way that we talk about, and we're going to listen to 1 Kings 21 here in a second. But if you think about it, God, you know, sent his son to die because he loved us so much. That's how much he loved us. But when we talk about things that we want, is it because of love? Is it because of love we want money? Is it because of love that we want the new car?
It's because of greed.
Because of greed. See, that's one of the things I really like about the Ten Commandments. And that's well said, because greed implies selfishness. And the Ten Commandments really get at the heart of the intent of what's in our hearts. And God, in the commandments, we tend to look at the commandments in the past, and to me, I look at them mostly as physical things, you know, lying, stealing. Here's the God that I'm bringing. Things that we could all touch and feel. And one of the things then in this series of the Ten Commandments and looking back on it, you know, when you go back and look at, you know, at least the last six, and actually all of them, you go back and you really see that where does the violation of a commandment, any one of the Ten Commandments, where does the violation of that commandment begin? Heart, in our heart, in our minds. Brother Harlan gave a series of lessons recently on attitude. Does anybody remember what the three elements of an attitude are? What you think, what we feel, and then what's the last one? What we do, what an action is. Is there a parallel there? In all the Ten Commandments, not just this one, they all begin with what we think, what we feel, and then what we do. And it's the thinking and the feeling that we think that we can hide, but that's the slippery slope. That's the slope. When you start thinking it, can you think one thing and do another? Pretty hard. We think we can.
Causes lots of conflict.
A lot of conflict. We think that we can do this. We can straddle the fence, and we start thinking. But pretty soon, when you become consumed with something, it'll take you down that path of whatever you're thinking about. Because then that thinking turns into a feeling. I really have to have that. Or I really got to do that. And then we act. And when we act, that's typically the point of no return, isn't it? The thinking and the feeling aspect of it, you can wrestle with it and get your arms around it. It doesn't mean that what you're thinking and you're feeling is not impacting others, though. I think that's a really important point to understand. But it's when you act, that's when things are set in motion that are very difficult to get back and along. So the thing that I really like and that I thought about in the Ten Commandments is that God has given us such a wonderful gift of the Ten Commandments. What he's done, he set boundaries around our thoughts and our feelings. Think about that. He's moved upstream from the physical, things that we want to score as, I didn't do that. You know, I'm okay. I hit 9 out of 10 commandments. I'm pretty good. But he moves it back upstream, and he tells us that it's that thinking and that feeling. In fact, you know, where should we have our focus of our attention? we talked about, you know, we had a lesson on worry. And if we apply the same principle, you know, when you start worrying about something, you become obsessed with it, don't you? And it just eats you up. And if we had, and some of us think, when we go back and we look at Psalms 1:1, when it talks about meditating on the Lord, if we are successful in meditating and keeping God in the forefront of our mind, in our thinking, and we're successful, you know, meditating on the Lord, as Psalms tells us, is the same skill it takes to worry about things that we don't have any control over. But I really love these Ten Commandments because it you know, for me, it really has underscored, you know, really how much God does really love us, how much He wants to give us the boundaries to be successful in Him, to live with Him. What would happen if let's take covenant. Let's take this Ten Commandment. If the world, if everybody didn't covet, what would the world look like today? Just this one commandment.
It'd be a much better place than it is now.
Okay. Give me specifics of what that looks like.
People would be very content.
People would be content.
There may not be the murder that you see over possessions. There's that problems of coveting involved in murder.
Okay.
Remember the movie The Truman Show in the little town?
I don't think I ever saw that. Was
okay.
That Jim Carrey?
Yeah.
I don't think I saw it, but I can.
But it was kind of like Father Knows Best. I mean, so you think about it, some of the sitcoms that portrayed a family that was very innocent, for lack of a better word. A lot of those things that we desire and covet, those things are gone. They're not often in those. And so you kind of see a lot more innocent type existence.
Points. Other things? In general, the examples you gave, we personalize it as individuals, but remember the entire world is made up of individuals. So on an individual basis, we talked about outcomes. But think about from an organization. If you just move it up one step into an organization that you work for, there wasn't any coveting at all. How move it up to a nation? Would there be wars between people?
No.
Probably not. When you stop to think about it, something so simple as the term that rolls off our tongues, coveting. But think about the consequences, not only individually, but think about it from a societal standpoint, from a global standpoint, what this world would look like. Just this one. Because when you think about it, you know, the people who are in power. Did God want a hand of paint for his nation? He didn't, did he? That's fascinating. I mean, think back and think about the context of that. What do you think he didn't want? A king. He wanted to be our king. He wanted us to focus on him. And then think what happened when what was it that Israel, what was Israel's first slippery step as a nation? What was it they all of a sudden wanted?
To be like the other nations.
They wanted to be like the other nations. The other nations had a king. And then we look, we're going to listen to a person now in 1 Kings, 21st chapter, and listen to this. But this is the example. There's many examples of coveting. And again, I haven't come back to the definition yet, but I want you to listen to this. And then I want us to talk about desire. What's the difference between desire and coveting? So listen to this First King. It's about King Ahab and Jezebel.
And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, Give me thy vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house. And I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it. Or if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money. And Naboth said to Ahab, The Lord forbid it me, that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased, because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid him down upon his bed, and turned away his face, and would eat no bread. But Jezebel his wife came to him, and said unto him, Why is thy spirit so sad, that thou eatest no bread? And he said unto her, Because I spake unto Naboth the Jezreelite, and said unto him, Give me thy vineyard for money, or else, if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. And Jezebel his wife said unto him, Dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread, and let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name, and sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in his city, dwelling with Naboth. And she wrote in the letters, saying, Proclaim a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people. And set two men, sons of Belial, before him, to bear witness against him, saying, Thou didst blaspheme God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him, that he may die. And the men of his city, even the elders and the nobles who were the inhabitants in his city, did as Jezebel had sent unto them, and as it was written in the letters which she had sent unto them. They proclaimed a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people. And there came in two men, children of Belial, and sat before him. And the men of Belial witnessed against him, even against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did blaspheme God and the king. Then they carried him forth out of the city, and stoned him with stones, that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth is stoned and is dead. And it came to pass, when Jezebel heard that Naboth was stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, Arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, which he refused to give thee for money, for Naboth is not alive, but dead. And it came to pass, when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab rose up to go down to the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, to take possession of it. And the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, Arise, go down to meet Ahab king of Israel, which is in Samaria. Behold, he is in the vineyard of Naboth, whither he is gone down to possess it. And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith the Lord, Hast thou killed, and also taken possession? And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith the Lord, In the place where dogs lick the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick thy blood, even thine. And Ahab said to Elijah, Hast thou found me, O mine enemy? And he answered, I have found thee, because thou hast sold thyself to work evil in the sight of the Lord. Behold, I will bring evil upon thee, and will take away thy posterity, and will cut off from Ahab him that pisseth against the wall, and him that is shut up and left in Israel. And I will make thine house like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha the son of Ahijah, for the provocation wherewith thou hast provoked me to anger, and made Israel to sin.
Pretty interesting story. I mean, most of us have all heard it before. I would submit to you that the Tenth Commandment, Thou shalt not covet, is hard to rank the Ten Commandments, but the Tenth Commandment, Thou shalt not covet, to me is the slippery slope of all the commandments. And let's take an example of this particular story. What was the thing that kicked this whole story off? What was Ahab coveting? What does the word covet mean? He wanted. Let's ask this question first. What's the difference between coveting and desiring something?
Coveting is
okay.
Desire is just the fact that you want it, but you're not going to do whatever it takes to get it.
It's pretty well said. Anybody else want to add to it?
Well, I don't know. I think
coveting has more to do with wanting what someone else has instead of, I mean, a desire to have something. But if I want, I want a new car, but if I want your new car, it's something that's yours that I want. I want you to not have it so I can have it. I think there's an element of that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I think that's Paul said too.
You were talking last week and I was telling you about my best friend who just bought a new car. Chris and I were talking about, as I kept talking about it, she's like, "Are you company?"
It's a nice car and one he really likes. Just saying.
Leave it to our wives to point that out.
It's like, no, I'm desiring.
It hasn't slipped yet. So
that last thing kind of gets the way.
The reason I attached that, I think, Kim's point about it's an insatiable, nothing's going to satisfy it. And I agree also with Joyce, it's often that other guy's stuff. Right.
It's just that it seems like jealousy is more tied in with coveting.
Because you look at the king offered him even a better vineyard. So he had a better vineyard than he just wanted that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be clear, you know, Sister Joyce's point is correct with regard to the commandment itself, you know, specific about your neighbors. Now, typically, though, what starts that slippery slope, though, is that desire to want that nice car, and maybe it's not your neighbors, but the impact can lead to the same thing. You become consumed by that want. What you now move from a desire into a need.
And I think we get that with a lifestyle. You know, we want the house, the two cars, and this and that, and then we get jealous of those that do have it, and we're resentful, and there's all those emotions, what we think and then what we feel, and there's all those emotions that tie into, you know, that jealousy doesn't have to be specific. I want that car that my neighbor has, but I want his lifestyle, and thus I can then resent what he does have. Mm-hmm. Why is he better than me? I mean, there's all kinds of lies that we then go through and tell ourselves to justify the way we feel. Mm-hmm. And what we began to think of as desire, covet, and...
Did you hear Brother Harlan's term? What was the first term that he used right at the end? You begin to think. When you move from thinking, you move into those justifying, rationalizing things. Haven't done anything yet, but boy, you're making that case in your mind, aren't you? I do.
As you said, it comes back to the intent of your heart.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts sliding down.
Desire is defined as to wish or long for. Habit is defined as to desire wrongfully, inordinately, or without due regard to the rights of others.
Oh, just a side note thought, often when you have that insatiable desire, it's trying to fill a void of something else. So what else is going on with that being talking so? Or is it you're missing the Lord in your life? Is it, you know, sometimes those things get overshadowed by our lack of something else.
Hold that thought, because it's a great thought. It's a good thought. But I want to come back to you for a second. She's got her hand.
I was going to say kind of the same thing. You see people, what other people have, and you think, well, that's the only way that I can be happy, because they look at me. When you actually get inside, you know, those people, you find out that they're not as happy as they wish they were. And you're happy, it makes you more happy with what you actually do have than rather than what you don't.
Well, what's the opposite of coveting? It's contentment. Contentment with what you have and your stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the scale, really, and I see it as a scale, you go from contentment to desiring, from desiring to coveting.
Okay, hold that. Okay. Well, somebody read. So we've got two things being held right now. Yeah, we got 8 minutes. Could you read Hebrews 13:5 for me? Because this has been talked about a couple times now with regard to the term has been used.
13:5. Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee.
You talked about contentment. You talked about contentment, and it also talks about the fact, though, that you shouldn't covet. But there's a promise there too. But what's the last part of that verse say? He will never leave thee or forsake you. Now, who's he talking to there? Third of people that are saved. So I mean, he's making promises to people who are saved. Not deeper into that. But the thing I want you to hold in your hands there is it wrong to desire? So you put it a scale from contentment to desire to coveting.
And I don't think it's wrong, but if you spend, someone who's content can go looking, oh, you know, that'd be nice to have, but you know, whatever, that's just a nice thing. Mm-hmm. Somebody spends all their time, oh, look, that's nice, and oh, look, that's nice, then they go, okay, well, all this nice stuff, I have to get something. Mm-hmm. And you know, I see it as this, as a scale.
It comes down to trusting the Lord and your relationship with the Lord. And if you're saying that you're putting your needs, your desires, your life in His hands and what He wants for you, there's nothing wrong with desiring. He says He'll give us the desires of our heart if we have a good relationship with Him. But with, it has to be what He thinks we should have. And we're content with what He's given us. And I think that it comes down to our relationship with the Lord.
It does, and being content in what He's given us. Because one of the other principles we talked about is very biblical, who owns everything? Yeah, well, we start with the false premise that it's what we own. So we're just desiring what God owns from somebody else.
Well, I think the other part of the desires, people, quote, said what you want to call a goal, a dream, a whatever, and then you're just so upset when it doesn't come to fruition, and Lord may not want it in your life, let it go. But
yeah.
We don't do that very well. We get our sights set on earthly rather than heavenly.
That's the mission of the will piece.
Yeah.
There's this, well, I would say it's kind of cliche, but there's a song, I think it's a Garth Brooks song, Unanswered Prayers, and thank God for unanswered prayers, because sometimes you pray and you think this is what you want, but sometimes the biggest blessings come in forms that you never even thought of, and the answer was no, and something else came out of it.
Well said. Yeah, that's great.
Do you think God cares about the material things that you have?
Great question. No, what does He care about?
He does.
He cares about our heart, doesn't He? He cares about what the affections of our heart is. And He wants to be on Him to the degree that He gave His Son to die for us. Tell me something that it's okay to desire for. Sister Joyce talked about, you know, desires. God wants to give us the desires of our heart. So desire is not wrong. The object of your desire becomes the key. I desire to be a good father. I desire to be a good husband. I desire to be a faithful churchman. I desire to be a good neighbor.
There's nothing wrong with even desiring a new car. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And if we have the means to do that, God's not opposed to us having a new car. But if my focus is the new car and that's what I think it takes to make me content, I'm not trusting the Lord to know what's best for me.
Perfectly said. Because there's nothing wrong with money. There's nothing wrong with cars. All these things are God's. But they are God's. He created them. And so, it's again, He has no barrier. There's no barriers to God blessing us with those things. It's how do we acquire those? And if we do it because our heart is in the right place. So how do we, let me ask this question, how do we avoid coveting?
Yes, Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving for what? Thanksgiving for what we do have, okay?
Thank because if you find yourself going there, when is enough enough? What is enough? When we be content.
Do we truly believe the Lord has said he would provide what we needed?
Yeah. Keeping our eyes on him instead of on those around us.
Yeah.
If you keep the first four commandments, the other five kind of fall into place. The first four are about your relationship with God. Put God first in your life. Worship nothing but God in your idols. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. You do those things. Not coming becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, well, that's what Burial said. Our relationship with God, we focus on that. It's Burial said. I think it's even, you can even, you know, someone that you cut what they have is a compliment to them. You take the focus off of yourself and say, you know, I'm really pleased that you have this. You have a wonderful house. You have a wonderful car. And not looking at something that you're also looking to, but that you're entirely pleased for that.
That's not coveting.
Exactly, but I'm saying, how do we avoid coveting?
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I think the two words that people make a mistake, or three words, is I wish I. Or
yeah.
Four, I wish I had.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those four words are the mistake that we make when it comes to, you know, somebody else's stuff or something that you see, is I wish I had. And the minute you say that, that's when you start to slip and fall.
I deserve it more than they do.
I deserve it. Oh, yeah. Anytime I deserve, yeah. That I deserve is probably the...
And we justify it. They don't even appreciate it. I would appreciate it. I'd wash that car three times.
I would use it a lot better.
Exactly.
Okay, our time is just about up. Just a couple things I want to say, though. This is great discussion. First of all, the example of Ahab and Jezebel, it started with him coveting his neighbor's property. But just real quickly, think about the number of commandments in that story alone that were violated. Caused his neighbors to bear false witness against God, accusing God. Naboth of bearing false witness not only against God, but also they were bearing false witness themselves. They stole. What else did they do? They murdered. They coveted. You can argue that they had other gods beforehand. You go through, and that's my whole point about this.
They used the Lord's name in vain.
They lose that, exactly. So if you stop and you think about that one sin of coveting your neighbor, the slippery slope that it puts us down, when you think, you act, when you think, you feel, and then you act, and look at everything that was set in motion there that violated God's commandments.
You know, I almost went back to even further than that. Ahab thought he should have whatever he wanted. He deserved it. He was entitled.
Right. Well, he thought it was, but he actually tried to do it the right way initially, didn't he?
Yeah.
But his wife, who he thought he had to have, she wasn't. She was a Phoenician princess that worshipped false gods. The slippery slope of coveting went back that far, if you stop to think about it.
I was just going to say that, you know, here we have the 10th commandment that actually ties back into the first commandment. If we start coveting other things, then maybe we start putting up other gods before God.
Yeah. Very well said.
And God says if you're guilty of one, you're guilty of all. That's a perfect example.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. Great discussion, everybody.
It's when you're still holding her.
Are you still holding yours? You remember? I thought
having a void, that insatiable desire, what does that mean to fill? And that was the way back to God.
But also, and I tried to look back on that, is that where we put the focus of our desire. Desire itself is not wrong. Anything else? Okay. Thanks, everybody.